Hi, I'm Tom Rogers, president of the Qigong Institute. This podcast is on primordial Qigong, and our return guest is Dr. Roger Yonka. Dr. Yonka is a doctor of oriental medicine. He's the director of the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, a founding board member of the National Qigong Association. He's also author of two of the most popular textbooks on Qigong and self-healing, which are The Healer Within and The Healing Promise of Qi. And more information on his background is available on previous podcasts. So, Roger, why don't you start out by reminding us about your institute just briefly, and how does all of that relate to this topic that we've got about Wuji primordial Qigong?
Yes, Tom, thank you. And first, as every time I get an opportunity, I want to do this is to appreciate you for the work you do at the Qigong Institute and reflect back on Ken Sancier, founder, who was such a great pioneer in creating the Qigong Institute. And the website that you maintain is amazing, and it's so informative, and it's such a egalitarian platform upon which so much information is provided. So thank you again and again. And then a quick little note on the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, which is a training and research institute, and we have trained many, many teachers of Qigong and Tai Chi in a very high quality, of course I have that bias, high quality curriculum that's a 200-hour teacher training or instructor training curriculum. Tom is a graduate of that program, and we're honored, and he is an esteemed graduate. The other thing that we do is research, and we've recently had published in the American Journal of Health Promotion a review of all the research, which has been looked at by many as kind of the evidence base. We talk about the evidence base these days, and that article has been quoted many times, and it was actually the subject of an ABC News segment and so forth. So training and research, these two combine to create what the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, or IIQTC, does. The IIQTC was founded in the year 2000 in a kind of reverence for the fact that by the big numbers and the millennial kind of feeling of the Roman calendar, that we were going into a new era, and clearly we are in a new era. And the energetics, the side of everybody's life that has to do with energetics and the conversation about energy and the conservation of energy and the multiplication of energy is huge. And to just put the primordial approach to Qigong or Wuji Qigong into perspective in that whole context, we do train our graduates in a postgraduate program to teach primordial Qigong, a particular, shall we say, approach to primordial Qigong, which is integral from the point of view of the Institute of Integral, because it is not especially associated with any sort of a lineage, but is very much a reflection of a whole array of profound, deep foundation principles of the practice of qi cultivation. And the institute, the IIQTC, is based on that idea of the integral view, meaning not a particular family's view, not a particular dynasty's view, not a particular lineage view, not a particular school view, but instead an embracing of the deepest principles across all views. And back to you, Tom. I'm thinking that you'll kind of direct me a little bit more in the primordial side of things. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I think a good place to start was, if we're talking about primordial Qigong, why don't we just talk about, like, what's the most popular, and then I guess that would form a foundation for then looking at one of its particular forms, which would be primordial.
Yeah, the question about what is the most popular, or what is the most accessible, or what is the most best, shall we say? And people ask me all the time, you know, well, given my situation, what Qigong should I be doing? You know, I know someone who has cancer. What Qigong should they be doing? I know somebody who's dealing with stress. I'm dealing with stress. What kind of Qigong should I be doing? And first, to say that there are 10,000 by the scholars in China doing academic research, it is noted that there are 10,000 forms of Qigong, which include the different versions of Tai Chi, long form, short form, modified form Tai Chi. All of those are forms. And the definition of a form typically is a set of gestures or a set of internal processes. So if the body's not moving, but the mind focus internally is kind of on the go, if you will, and one of the ways that it could be going is towards nothingness, and so there are processes and thought pathways to take the mind toward nothingness, and that can be a kind of Qigong too. But back to your question, what is the most popular, what is the best, or what kind of Qigong should anyone be doing? I would really hesitate to say any one particular form, because there are 10,000 of them. They were all developed by people who really cared. I mean, who would come up with a form of Qigong or Tai Chi that they weren't interested in? So it's going to be a caring person with a deep sense of purpose who's probably fairly cultivated or extremely cultivated, maybe even, shall we say, enlightened, who's going to develop an alternative approach to everything that's ever been developed before. So we can't, it would be just ridiculous to say that would be false or wrong or wrong-minded or silly or inappropriate. It could only be just, wow, like, here's another amazing approach to Qigong put together by someone who really cares and someone who knows a lot about what this is all about. So my favorite answer to the question of what form should be or is the most popular, and what form should anyone be doing given the situation they're in, is that one should do the kind of Qigong that they love the best, because there's typically going to be a whole lot more energy, qi, life force, around a kind of qigong that you love the best. And doing qigong for reasons that you don't really care about, well, why would you do it at all? And so it's really important, I think, to think for one more moment about this, because often people ask this question, which form of qigong should I be doing, as if there's an answer that's some specific form. Oh, well, you should definitely be doing this form, you know, developed by this particular person who lived during this particular dynasty on this particular mountain in China. And that's just so complicated, and it's really inappropriate. And so what happens is that people ask these questions that are really naive, like, what kind of Qigong is the most popular? What kind of Qigong should I be doing? And the answer is always, well, what do you want? You know, where do you want to go? What is happening in your life? For instance, you're walking down the street and you bump into someone doing Qigong. Well, that's like right in front of you. So why would you travel to China to find somebody who you can't even understand what they're saying when you just bumped into somebody who was standing in front of you? So right today, when you're standing in front of that person, that's the most important kind of Qigong. Now, is it the most important Qigong for you for the rest of your life? Probably not. But in that moment, you know, to be able to take that experience, to get on that bridge, to cross that, you know, to enter that portal, to cross towards that ground using that methodology, that's beautiful. So I would say the most popular form should be the one that you're doing. And, wow, if you get into the business of saying this form of Qigong is not popular enough, I'm looking for a more popular form, that now starts sounding like a shopping trip at a shopping mall where you're just kind of trying stuff on and not really doing anything except entertaining yourself, probably as a distraction from the pain of your life. And, you know, what sort of motivation is that?
So you want to be doing a type of Qigong that you really like. Can you say briefly say what's common to all types of Qigong? Like what, just the few things constitute base Qigong?
The foundation of every form of Qigong, Tai Chi, yoga, and any other methodology that is a kind of a mind-body energetics practice. And by the way, I like that little phrase, mind-body energetics, because it really frames up like the body is an energy, is energy, as we know, and that the mind is energy, and so forth. And so everyone, including things like awareness through movement, which is Feldenkrais, developed by a gentleman who was a judo master in Israel back in the 50s and 60s. It's a kind of Western mind-body energetics practice, all of them. And there are many. There are many what we would call latter-day or new innovations or fusion types of these mind-body energetics practices. And all of them are based on what we call the three intentful points of focus, or as they're stated in the Chinese language, translated into English, the three intentful adjustments, or the three purposeful or intentful corrections. So think of your posture right now. Could you correct your posture? Well, of course you could. So could you correct your breath? Well, of course you could. So the reason why the word correction is used or adjustment is used is that usually when we stop to think of it, you know, we can in fact make an adjustment. We can also make a mind adjustment. So this is called the three intentful adjustments or corrections, and also called the three intentful points of focus or points of mindfulness. And that is the body, adjusting the body either in a stillness, like in a posture, or adjusting the body in motion. And then the second one is the breath. First attending to the breath, noticing the breath, and then adjusting the breath or correcting the breath. And then the third one is the mind focus. And, of course, we use the mind to be able to adjust the body and the breath. So now we're going to use the mind to adjust itself, which is a beautiful kind of, almost like a kind of a cumbersome, oxymoronish, conundrum-y thing to accomplish, is to use the mind to be able to adjust the mind. But that's the underlying foundation of every kind of Qigong, Tai Chi, yoga, other kind of fusion, mind-body energetics practice. And it's a beautiful question, because then, you know, the next question it would be, well, do you mean that, like, every kind of practice, absolutely every kind of practice is that at the foundation level? And the answer is pretty much yes, because if you leave one of those three out, by the way, also called sometimes the three treasures, if you leave one of them out, then you're kind of like not doing the whole thing that you thought you wanted to do.
So you're not doing Qigong at that point. Qigong consists of these basic practices. So given that those are the basic practices, those are in primordial too. So what's the unique quality that makes primordial more intriguing or more effective or more useful?
Yeah, it has to do with the bottom-up or top down version of who we perceive we are. So let me give you the bottom-up version, so then you'll recognize what I mean by the top-down version. A primordial Wuji Qigong is a top-down version. Bottom-up means I think I'm a body, and when I use my consciousness to think about who I am or what I am, I use my eyes and my touch and other senses to come to an awareness of the fact that I am a body. Then I might actually be more aware of the fact that I am a body because my body is not working very well. So I have to go to the bathroom too much. I can't sleep. I feel tired all the time. I'm in pain. So now the part of myself that I believe I am is really bothering me. And so then I might say, well, is there anything else besides the physiology of me that is me and might even be a part of how the body is feeling this pain or not able to sleep? And, of course, everybody knows that pain is exaggerated when we're more stressed. Probably everybody who's listening right now could say, oh, yeah, well, I know about that. And it's the same with our sleep and our lack of energy. When you look at your lack of energy really closely, and that's what Qigong is all about, by the way, is a radical process of self-observation. People think of Qigong as an exercise, and that's okay. I mean, it's reasonable, but it's really more of a meditation. But actually, it's even more of what we're going to get to around the whole primordial, which we'll describe here in a moment. So the concept is, I'm a body, my body's not working, maybe there's another part of myself, oh yes, it's my mind. I wonder if my mind has anything to do with why my body's in pain. And of course, if you wake up and can't go back to sleep, if you pay really close attention, about 97% of all those people will discover or already know that they're awake because they're thinking about things, and that the thinking that they're doing is having an influence on their neurotransmitters, and their neurotransmitters are all waking them up instead of arranging themselves. The neurotransmitters are waking up the body instead of assembling in such a way as to put the body to sleep. And so then, if you're really a kind of a highly developed sort of individual, you might say, well, is it possible that there's something more to me than a body and a mind? And so then we reach upwards in this kind of stacking of body, mind, spirit, or body, mind, energy, by the way, because it can go either way. This stacking where I think I'm a body and then I really have to push and learn and study and reach out to realize that I'm more than a body and a mind. And so that's a bottom-up view of what a human being is. And even in our science, we're living with this assumption that's so deranged. And the assumption is, I'm a body, but I might also be an energy. And so that's like the body asking itself if it might have an energetic component, which is a body-up version of who we are. Well, in the Chinese, in the deepest levels of Chinese philosophy, in the deepest levels of any indigenous culture, and in the deepest levels of the medical systems that arise from indigenous cultures, the view goes the other way, and it kind of goes like this. Instead of asking the question, as a body, is it possible that I have an energy, the indigenous view or the Chinese view or the top-down view is that I am an energy, and I have elected in whatever way that happens, and it's difficult to have conversations about how that occurs, and it always ends up being opinions because you can't do science. Our science is just can't do it. I mean, you cannot do science on this very well. I mean, you can do physics and you can come up with the Heisenberg uncertainty principle and so forth, and maybe we'll talk about that. But it's very difficult to do science assuming that you are a transcendental, eternal being. And so we can talk about whether you can or can't do science on that in a minute. But the point is that from the top-down view, I am a transcendental, boundless and timeless, non-substantial being of some sort. And that being takes on a non-substantial, I would say local, potential. So think of yourself as a diffuse, universal, quantum being that's pure energy, and that somehow that energy is going to focalize in a way that is difficult to describe. It's easier to experience. That's why we do a retreat on primordial Qigong for 5 days and let people really have an experience of this, because you can't talk about it and you can't do science on it. You can only experience it. So the diffuse energetic quantum self, if you want to call it that, timeless and boundless, then begins to coalesce, shall we say. And in the Chinese literature from thousands of years ago, it's amazing that these characters figured this out, you know, not 100 years ago. Einstein wrote the paper about relativity now about 107 years ago. So this is not 107 years ago. It's not 1,000 years ago. It's more than 1,000 years ago. It could be even 40, 50, 70, 100 thousand years that people knew this at some level or another. So just wrapping up here on this idea is that the top-down version is, first I'm diffuse universal energy. I coalesce into a regional energetic. I take on a body. I take on a body at that point. So primordial Qigong, Wuji Qigong, is about having Qigong be not a body exercise, not a mind exercise, but as an experience of one's pre-birth nature. And I don't mean just pre-birth like being in the warm hot tub of the womb. I'm talking about previous to the manifestation of the physical, and even previous to the manifestation of the local non-physical. So the body is the physical. The local non-physical is the mind or the character or the personality. We're talking about a Qigong that is on purpose focused directly on the transcendental aspects of our nature into that field of Wuji or oneness that is considered to be primordial, which means from before the Big Bang. Last little note is that the view here of Wuji becoming Taiji, which is the previous to the substance in the universe, pre-Big Bang is what we would say relative to our science, to the post-Big Bang, so that the Wuji Qigong is about building a bridge or a portal to the aspect of our nature which existed before the Big Bang. And if you look at the history of science and so forth, they'll say this is like trillions of years or something like that. Well, of course, previous to the Big Bang, there's no time anyway, so it doesn't even matter. But the idea is the aspect of myself that's eternal, that existed before the Big Bang, is present to me now. And the practice of primordial Qigong is a tool, shall we say, for the local self to be able to access its non-local wholeness.
Well, that certainly makes it sound a lot different than just doing your normal Qigong practice. So the normal Qigong practice, where you mentioned the three intentful corrections, one way to consider that is just, I'm going to do my Qigong practice for my health, and that's the way to look at it from a traditional Chinese medicine standpoint, where you're manipulating your qi for your health, and you're trying to get rid of blockages, which are manifested as pain, blockages in the flow of energy. or you maybe don't have enough energy, and it's that would be manifested as a chronic illness. So you do your three and tenfold corrections, and you do your favorite Qigong practice. This primordial, from your explanation, sounds like it's a kind of a higher level of realization of your practice. It's a realization of the fact that mind and body are not split. It's the holistic idea that everything's connected, that you are energy connected to this web of life, which, by the way, is also is basic. That's fundamental to Eastern mysticism and philosophy, and it's fundamental to quantum physics.
Correct.
So that's kind of a way to characterize, I guess, primordial as maybe being more on the spiritual or Shen side, and it's a concept that involves Wu Ji. And so what is primarily from a theoretical or philosophical or cosmological standpoint, how does this Wu Ji fit into Qigong practice?
Yes, well, first of all, exactly everything that you just said perfectly aligned with the topic here today and the conversation that we're having. And when we get to the aspect of this whole dialogue in the world of Qi cultivation and personal practice and mind-body practice and mind-body energetics and the cultivation of Qi and the cultivation of our true nature, it very quickly takes us into the issue of this Wuji concept from the Chinese culture, which basically we just described as being the shape of the world, as being the shape of the world previous to the Big Bang that we recognize in science and cosmology. But when you anthropomorphize this, when you talk about it in terms of human beings, it's a process of accessing an aspect of our own nature. So if we wanted to say, well, what was the sun before the Big Bang? We could say, well, it was an indeterminate continuum of some sort of energy, or even something that's more subtle than energy, that somehow was transformed into the sun beginning with the Big Bang. And we could say, well, what about the Earth? And then we could say, well, what about, living beings? And so the answer would always be previous to the Big Bang, previous to the separation of the oneness into the two-ness, which is the non-dual separating into duality, what was the Earth previous to that? What was I previous to that? And of course, we come up with this idea that, in physics they say that the entire universe that we know was originally the size of a pea. You go to your garden, you go to your pea plant, you open a pea pod, you take out one pea, and somehow scientists, and I have absolutely no idea how this is done, we'll use metaphorically language that says previous to the Big Bang, the entire cosmos as we know it was the size of a pea. And then, at 1 second and at 2 seconds and, a billion years ago, and then, the gases formed into planets and the suns and the galaxies. So you have the formulation of matter, and then matter does all the things that it does, including suns that burn out, we call them red dwarfs or something like that, and including people who show up, and they weren't there before, and then they showed up and they were like little tiny human beings, and then later they were larger human beings and so forth. And so the question is, well, what am I, what is present within me that is a reflection of my original nature previous to the Big Bang? Because the promise, that's why we called one of my books The Healing Promise of Qi. The promise of the pure energetic nature of our lives is that the aspect of ourself that's eternal, which cannot get sick and does not die is always present within us. And in the ancient indigenous tradition, it is believed that that aspect of our nature is present within us at all times. So as we recognize our own self in this big picture and then bring it all back to where we are today as a person who may or may not be comfortable, who may or may not be sleeping well, who may or may not digest well or have an immune system that's working well, who may or may not be in pain, the Wuji concept translates into a beautiful nugget, and that is that the aspect of yourself that cannot get sick and does not die is present within you now. And that means that the part of ourself which is eternally well, the part of ourself that cannot be corrupted in any way, the part of ourself that cannot get sick and does not die, is here somewhere within us. And primordial Qigong is directly shooting at the whole idea of connecting with the aspect of myself which is eternally well, to see if I can uncover and reveal and bring into my own experience the part of myself that actually trumps or is more powerful than and is more neglected than my local self and all of my, you know, problems and complaints and aches and pains and diseases, and even if they're really serious diseases. The theory in primordial Qigong, which is, you know, I use the word theory because it would be like an assault on some people's lives to say, hey, did you know that you're paralyzed, but you're actually eternally well? It just seems so insensitive and inappropriate. And so we have to let this live as a question that is investigated and answered by every person. That's why when we do a primordial Qigong retreat, there's a certain body of information that's being exchanged, but it is mostly about the internal process that each person's having as they move themselves more in the direction of being, shall we say, connected to or open to the primordial self.
Now, if I go on YouTube, which I just did, and look up primordial or Wuji Qigong, there's a whole boatload of them out there. And it sort of, it brings up the question, I mean, there's many forms of this Wuji or primordial Qigong, but you kind of have to wonder, how is that even possible? Because in Wuji, in Chinese, means essentially formless.
I know. That's the beauty of all this. But how it goes is like this. We are explorers. Every person is an explorer for, I would imagine, their most highly comfortable, highly efficient, most functional self. We want to have more time. We want to have more creativity. We want to have more fun. And so what can we do to move in the direction of that, given the fact that we live in form? Well, when you find out that there's a formless aspect of your own being, which is eternally well, then the goal is to close the gap between that part of ourself and this part of ourself. Because obviously, this is the primordial aspect of our nature is relatively neglected. We don't usually say, hey, let's go to a primordial party. We go to the mall and go shopping. We go to a movie. We want to distract ourselves, entertain ourselves, and so forth. And the primordial aspect of our being is actually quite entertaining, but highly neglected. And so because China is huge, and because the Chinese culture is ancient, and because the concept of Wuji is present in the Chinese culture from north to south to east to west. And when you go to Tibet, it's a similar concept. I don't know the words for that one. You go to India, it's a similar concept. And even if you go to the native shamans of the Americas, their whole concept of a transcendental domain, which is always present, and that certain people called shamans can get into this domain, they call it the underworld, use the underworld as a kind of a set of passageways to make sense of tying this all this mysterious conversation together. So every culture's got one of these. And China, because it's so huge and so ancient, has many, many forms of what we call Wuji Qigong. And of course, because we live as material beings, those forms often are built on the three treasures, which is the three intentful points of focus or the three corrections. And so we use a body focus, a breath focus, and a mind focus to bring ourselves to the gate. This is all metaphorical, of course, but when I say gateway, I mean to come into proximity with a portal or a bridge to the aspect of ourself that we neglect so frequently, and which is such a sad kind of neglect. And so every form of Wuji Qigong is a way to use body, breath, and mind to get across that bridge and into a relationship with our transcendental nature. Now, some kinds of Wuji Qigong, which, by the way, when I speak of the Wuji Qigong that happens at the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, we're talking about the primordial Wuji form that we teach, which is a set of steps. We're also talking about the Taoist medicine wheel, which is an entire association with the manifest world, including the seasons and the directions and so forth. So we put the Wuji Qigong onto the Taoist medicine wheel, and then we also do what is called riding the dragon. And riding the dragon is purely spontaneous Qigong. It doesn't have any gestures to remember at all. It's just a kind of wiggling around, or we call it spontaneous Qigong. In Chinese, the Chinese characters basically mean a natural flowing sort of Qigong. And so at the IIQTC, we talk about natural flow Qigong. All of these go together under the heading of a primordial, shall we say, experience and an integral approach to a primordial experience. But there's one particular form called Wuji Qigong that I learned from Zhu Hui, Master Zhu Hui, or Teacher Zhu Hui, in China, who was from Tian Tai Mountain. Tian means heaven, Tai means huge. So it's some mountains in eastern China that are a huge heaven. And he was a doctor who ran, he's passed away, like definitely one of my favorite teachers. He was the director of a Qigong clinic, which was also an acupuncture and massage clinic, but his favorite part of Chinese medicine was Qigong. And so we teach that particular form. There are many, many forms. One of the other forms of Wuji is standing still or sitting still. So anytime you see somebody who's doing a non-moving practice, what's called quiescent Qigong, with an internal focus of connecting to the deeper nature, those are all categorized as forms of Wuji Qigong, what we call standing, Zhan, Zhang, Zhuang, Zhuang, Jiang, Jiang, Zhuang, my Chinese is horrible, sorry, is standing like a tree or standing like a pole. And by the way, the top of your body is the heaven side of the pole. The bottom of your body is the earth side of the pole. So you are a pole. And so there's standing like a pole. But then Wuji means there is no pole. And then what that means is that there is no center and there is no circumference. So it talks about that's reflecting on the pre-Big Bang nature of things, where everything was indeterminate and had no form. that all every kind of Qigong that reflects towards connecting with one's eternal nature could easily be called Wuji Qigong.
Okay, so sort of to summarize that, then the primordial focus is on crossing through this metaphorical portal to your original nature. And if you look at some of the Taoist literature, like the Book of Balance and Harmony, it's called the Mysterious Path. You often use the word alchemy to describe primordial Qigong.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Well, in the Chinese tradition, the concept of alchemy goes way back. And just to talk about alchemy first as a discipline or a point of view, the classic metaphor is that alchemy can be described by telling this little couple of phrases. You transform something rough and very usual, like the example would be a bucket full of dirt, into gold. So the whole promise of alchemy is you can take something that's not very refined and make it into something extremely refined. And for a human being, the non-refined aspect of ourselves, the bucket of dirt, is who we are. As when we start to wake up to the fact that we are more than just a body, the whole life that we've led until then is our sort of rough ingredients, that which has been given life. And the alchemy process, personal alchemy process, would be to transform our actual bucket of ingredients into a highly refined, luminescent gold being. And so that's the story of alchemy. That's how alchemy works. If you look at the history of chemistry, the history of chemistry in any book about chemistry will go back to alchemy as its origins. And then, of course, it's supposed that since alchemy, that chemistry has been refined and become more logical, and therefore the whole promise of making gold out of something that's not gold is impossible. Alchemists believe that making rough ingredients into gold is possible, and they use themselves to prove that. And so it's a metaphorical process. Now, historically, alchemy was a pretty big deal in the Western world in the 13th century, 12th and 13th century. We're talking about the lead person that is named is someone called Paracelsus, who's also called the father of chemistry. So he was an alchemist who was the father of chemistry, however that works, and you can read up on that and see how that works. When you look in the Chinese tradition at the dates for when people were talking about the alchemy and the alchemy process, it goes back to about 1,500 or more years previous to when these ideas were widely circulated in Europe. And that is 500, 400, and 300 years before the year zero in the common calendar. And so we're talking about, 500 BC. And through that, around that time, the Chinese were emerging from their sort of tribal prehistoric era, which we could also call the shamanic era, and they were moving into the more, writing was appearing, philosophy and theory was appearing, and people were debating points of view by writing them down and so forth. So alchemy in the Chinese tradition, and also in India, by the way, there's a big debate between the Indian culture and the Chinese culture about who discovered alchemy. And, of course, if you talk to Carl Jung or any of the other holistic philosophers, they'll tell you that every society was discovering these things at the same time. That's what's called the collective unconscious and so forth. And so alchemy becomes a story about how a person can be transformed. That's the essence, transformation. How to be able to become that which is possible, and to do that from that which is actually here presently. So if we were to talk about our sort of, you know, complex personality and all the problems that we have and the aches and the pains that we have, alchemy would be a process of self-observation that goes so deep, penetrates through the experience that we've always been having to another experience which is possible, to be the same being and have another experience, and then to mine that experience. And of course, what would you be mining for? It would be the gold.
So the alchemy is, it seems like there's a couple aspects to alchemy. The first is just this sort of realization that there's more to Qigong than this basic practice. And the second part is realizing, okay, what is the alchemy doing? Well, the alchemy is creating this gold, and in the Chinese cosmology, it's the golden elixir of immortality. But can we really be immortal?
This is a beautiful question, Tom. And of course, we can't use science now, and we can't use logic now. So we can only talk about speculation. These are going to be personal speculations. Now, if you have enough people who are speculating the same thing, well, then, you know, you have somebody to talk to. If you're speculating these things on your own, you might feel kind of alone. The concept is not so much, is it possible that I could become immortal, meaning in the Western world, to live forever in the body that you have today. But instead, it's a whole other experience, which is recognizing the fact that I am inherently eternal or inherently immortal. So it isn't, can I become immortal? It's more like, what do I do when I realize that I am immortal? Well, that's kind of a cute moment there, right, where the average person will say, oh my gosh, you know, I've heard about immortality, and I love this idea of the elixir, the golden elixir of immortality, so where can I get some? The answer is, you are the elixir, and you've already got it. It's a question of allowing oneself then to go through the process of recognition and remembering. So it's not even like learning something new. It's actually there all along. So it's a kind of an uncovering or a recovering as opposed to becoming something new. First, let's just talk briefly about the methods. In other words, how do we, in these primordial type retreats, how do we spend our time, or what seems like time, given the fact that in the primordial state there is no time? But let's don't go there. Let's go to the fact that there's 5 days and there's a schedule and so forth. So we're going to investigate concepts about our true nature, and then we're going to do the three treasures. We're going to execute on and implement the three treasures by going to managing the body, managing the breath, and managing the mind. We're going to use those three intentful corrections assembled in different ways to be able to take us to that portal and to begin to expose ourselves in a radical sort of way, day after day, to our primordial nature. And of course, we're going to be with a whole group of other people who do the same thing. And so while it might have been interesting to have a discussion about where you live and what your work is and so forth on day one, and certainly you're going to meet new friends and want to know more about them and know where they live and where they work later, but as we get into the retreat itself, the conversation quickly turns to, you know, is this possible? How do you do it? What can I do to be more present to the aspect of myself that I'm always neglecting? And so we use these methods, spontaneous Qigong, called sometimes riding the dragon, which means the dragon in the Chinese tradition is a transpersonal it's a legendary figure. It's not a real figure. It lives in another parallel world. The dragon is an aspect of all of our being. So if we ride the dragon, it's really us getting onto, for a ride, the aspect of ourself which lives in a larger, more whole universe as opposed to a local, restricted universe. We use the Taoist medicine wheel. We use the primordial Qigong practice. We use what's called marrow bathing, a practice wherein we investigate the possibility of sending cosmic energies. And cosmic energies can be the energies of trees, stars and planets, or even beyond, and storing that energy in the marrow of our bones. All of this conspires, comes together, and is orchestrated at one of these retreats as a way to get us to that portal and then to be able to spend time with other people who are also in that portal of the transpersonal, the transcendent, the eternally well, etc. And then, you know, what kinds of conversations do we have on those days?
It leads to some really interesting stuff. Like, we haven't mentioned the I Ching, and that's a really big really big topic. But, I mean, if you think about it, the primordial pair of opposites is yin and yang, and that's fundamental to all of this practice. They create the movement in the Tao, or which is, you know, what we've been talking about, this Wu, and the interplay of the yin and yang create these dynamic patterns of energy. And there are typical patterns, like cycles such as day and night are examples. So the I Ching, for instance, is basically the 64 patterns are hexagrams. Each hexagram is associated with these cosmic archetypes, which represent patterns in nature and human situations. So the practice of primordial is getting us into a situation where all of a sudden ideas like this become alive, and we become very, very keyed in to the foundation of our reality, which I think actually can be summarized in terms of, metaphorically at least, in terms of dynamic patterns of energy.
Yes, yeah, I wouldn't even add too much to that. I would just say it another way, that we live in four dimensions. Those four dimensions are actually reflective, reflecting from the three. So the four dimensions are reflecting from the three, and the three is what the Chinese call the three treasures, and that's heaven, earth, and life, which lies between them, and that the three is reflected from the two, which in the Chinese is called Tai Chi or Tai Ji. The two is what you were just talking about, the yin and the yang, the in and the out, the up and the down, the hot and the cold, the round and the square, the wet and the dry, all of that mutual interaction of opposing, naturally opposing forces. And I love that concept of mutual interaction, because that takes us now to balance. And the two is reflected or expressed from the one. And so this is another one of those bottom-ups. We're going to go from recognizing that we're in four dimensions to recognizing that there are three treasures, heaven, earth, and life. We're going to go from there to recognizing duality, or the presence of space and matter, and then we're going to progress from there into our association with unity, oneness, and wholeness. And the energy that you were talking about infuses all of that.
So primordial is just such an incredibly rich practice. You've got the practice itself, and then you've got all these cool things that you can think about.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. And we teach the graduates at the at our teacher training program at the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi about alchemy in level 3, and then the primordial event that we're talking about is also an advanced training for our graduates, which then we hope that they will embody this and embed this and take this in deeply, and then take it back to their communities and be teaching more about alchemy and the primordial aspect of life. And it's kind of like, one more way to say this, Tom, is to say, rather than just, you know, trying to work on my body getting better, and rather than even trying to work on my body getting better because my mind is more clear, I'm going to go all the way to the top and work down. So primordial Qigong kind of passes over the idea of Qigong as an exercise and goes right to the heart of the idea that Qigong is a portal to my relationship with the aspect of myself that can learn, well, that already knows, I can learn how to access an aspect of myself that suffers less and feels less pain. And so by being in that relationship, the promises of that by the paradigm will trickle down into my mental experience and my emotional experience and my physical experience. So it's kind of like going, sometimes people say, go direct. Often that means go direct to your association with the divine. That's a kind of a Western concept. Go direct to your relationship with the divine, or even your oneness with the divine. And in the Chinese view, is go direct to your relationship with your golden transcendental unity nature, and then the benefits trickle down into the emotions and into the body.
So how do people find out more about your teacher training and about the primordial classes?
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Well, there are two websites that I would give that are the easiest access. The first one is the Institute website, which is IIQTC.org. IIQTC.org. And you'll find links there for both the teacher training and the primordial retreat. And then my personal website is Feel the Qi, Q-I. Feel, like first letter F, Frank, EELTHEQI.com. FeelTheQi.com. And there's a link there for the primordial as well. And then we have a YouTube channel. You can look that up. I have a blog, which if you go to Feel the Qi, remember it's a Q-I, no U, Q-I.com, feeltheqi.com. There's on the left-hand navigation, there's a blog click. And I've actually been writing about Wuji Qigong and Primordial Qigong in the blog, so there's information there. And then my book, The Healing Promise of Qi, is really about moving in the direction of this primordial. And so we have the 9 phases of practice, and the 10th phase is dissolving. And dissolving is a part of how the Wuji practice works. So there's some information there as well.
Okay, now just one last point of clarification. Primordial is open to anybody, not just people who have been 200 hours certified. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes. This is a public, what we call a public workshop, and we're typically we do it at a retreat center that is gorgeous and where the food is the kind of food that people who are on either vegetarian diets or non-inflammatory diets or so forth, they have typically they have animal protein available to those who want it. The environment that is beautiful in nature. There's free time to be able to, you know, not only be with other people doing this retreat into the primordial aspect of oneself, but also there is the possibility of being on your own and, you know, cultivating, shall we say. So open to anybody. And often people who've never been to any kind of a Tai Chi or a Qigong event ever come to these. Typically meditation, people who have an interest in meditation are a great candidates for loving this, but just people who are stressed and strained and excited about the fact that there's an aspect of their own being that they haven't investigated very much. Everybody in that category is really a candidate.
Okay, Roger, great. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Tom, and I really appreciate it.